Hi, you're listening to Petrie's MJF Chat Show. Your Petrie.com community magnate, that's me, Mary Jo Foley, will ask industry experts about various topics that you, our readers, will want to know about. Today is our first inaugural MJF Chat, and it's all about Office 365 stability and trust. For our guest, we have Tony Redmond, who is an independent consultant specializing in Microsoft collaboration technologies. He advises many companies on how to best develop, use, and exploit Microsoft technology, and he's the lead author of Office 365 for IT Pros, which is a constantly updated ebook covering Office 365 and associated technologies. Hi, Tony. Thanks for joining the chat.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. I'm just looking forward to seeing what we can come up with.
All right. So you and I were bantering about what could we talk about that would be interesting around Office 365. And both of us noted that there have been some problems in the past few months with Office 365. I remember in November, there were two back-to-back authentication incidents that took Office 365 down. In January, Office 365 users in Europe were unable to access their mailboxes for at least a day, some longer. And then February, Teams went down for multiple hours. Mm-hmm. So the common wisdom is Microsoft can run your cloud better than you can. But is this really even true? That's our main topic for today.
Okay, good topic. Do you want me to respond to those, or are you just going to hit me with them one after another?
Well, I think if you want to make any opening remarks, and then we've got a bunch of questions from Petrie readers in the forums.
Okay. So I think one thing that I would say up front is that in any cloud service, there's going to be incidents happening at any time of the day or night that you choose to measure it. That's the first thing. I think the important thing is how many people are affected by any particular incident. Mm-hmm. And in the incidents that you call out there, you know, like the MFA authentication issues, which were in November, Exchange in January, and then Teams in February, it was the case that all of Office 365 were affected. You know, there's the last official number we have from Microsoft is 155 million active monthly users that somebody who logs on at least once a month. Over the last 24 months, they've been adding users at the rate of about 3 million a month. So you could probably say there's at least 165, 170 million today. And none of those incidents affected more than a small percentage of the total user base. And we can come back to why that is. But I think it's really important to say upfront that any incident, no matter how large, is only going to affect a portion of the Office 365 base.
You know, that's a great point. And in fact, one of the Petrie readers, Jeremy W., said, should we be thinking about uptime for Office 365 as a whole, or should we be evaluating services separately? So that very point that you just made.
Yeah, well, you know, Microsoft has this financially backed service level agreement, which people sign up to when they commit to Office 365. So if you look at, for example, the Exchange or SharePoint SLA, it says, you know, can you get to email? Can you get documents? And if you can, the SLA is met. And the financial backing is that if they dip under 99.9% of the SLA, well, they'll pay out some credit to you for the service. Now, Microsoft has not had to make a payout that I am aware of since September 2011, which was in the very early days of Office 365. They had a DNS issue and the service went down for quite a long time. Comparatively speaking, quite a long time. And the service wasn't used by a lot of people at that stage. So that single incident had the capacity to affect the SLA. It moved the needle. Whereas today, any one of the incidents that we just talked about, they will barely budge the SLA needle. And that's the reason why I think Microsoft has hit its SLA every quarter since the last quarter of 2011.
I was wondering that too. And Greg Alto in the forum said, did they actually break the SLAs with any of these outages? So the answer is no, right?
Not at all. I mean, I think it takes it would take an incident which affected somewhere in the region of 500,000 users, which lasted more than 8 hours, I think, just off the top of my head. And if you had one of those incidents, it might affect it by 0.001%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a law of numbers. As the numbers of users get higher and higher, then the number of available minutes to those users gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's billions of minutes every quarter. So even if 1 million users go down for 2 hours, that's still not a lot of lost minutes compared to the billions of minutes that are available. That's the reason why.
You know, and our view of this is skewed, right? I mean, Microsoft will always say it's a small number of users affected. But if you're on Twitter or you're getting email from these people like I do, it feels like the entire world is affected, right? Everyone's screaming. No one seems to know what's going on. It just gets really out of hand. And, you know, a couple people brought this up in the forum as well. You know, what part of the problem is the way they're giving us status updates through Twitter, you know, through the Microsoft 365 support, I forget the exact name of it, but that account that notifies people when Microsoft's working on an incident. What they do now is they say, go to your dashboard and look at incident number, blah, 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 and you'll see where we're at. And a lot of the people we hear from are not the administrators of the account. They're people who work in a company and the company's not telling them what's going on. All they know is I can't get my email.
Yep, that's absolutely true. Microsoft has had this problem since day one. The account name, by the way, in Twitter is MSFT365 status, which gives out Twitter updates for all of the Microsoft 365 services. But Microsoft have had a problem with communicating with administrators and users since day one. I think one of the reasons why is that, as far as I can tell, Microsoft have nobody what I would call user advocates working in the service. So they've nobody. They have a whole pile of really talented engineers and designers and architects and programmers and so forth and so on. But they have nobody who looks at Office 365 or Microsoft 365 through the eyes of users. And so what this has led to is that when an incident happens, they go very rightly into technology mode, figuring out all the speeds and feeds that they get. And my gosh, they have telemetry coming out of the Quazoo to look at. And they look at all the telemetry and they figure out where the problem is and they swing into action. They go and fix things and reroute traffic and all the rest of it. But what they forget about is that the world of the tenant administrator, who used to be an on-premises administrator, has changed dramatically with the cloud. Mm-hmm. In the on-premises world, those people had total control of the situation. So they knew exactly what was going down. They knew, for example, if somebody had poured a Coca-Cola down the back of a server and it had become caramelized, which happened to me once and a long, long time ago, but that's not important right now. But they knew exactly what happened. And they knew what was going to happen to get the service back online, and they could communicate that in their own way to their own users. Now they're living in darkness because all they get is, they might get a whole pile of stuff on Twitter, some of which is pretty bad. Some of it is inaccurate. Some of it is just plain wrong. Some of it is vile rumors or whatever it is. And then there's a little bit of truth sprinkled there. And they're expected to make sense of this. They may or may not be able to get to the status pages where Microsoft is posting stuff. And even if they do get to those pages, let's face it, Microsoft don't assign their most gifted writers to status updates. You know, it's obscured in wonderful engineering lingo, which hides what's really happening. And right. I sometimes feel that Microsoft would do the whole world a favor with two simple steps. One is that they would send administrators messages via SMS if their tenant was affected. Everybody's got phones, everybody's got SMS, and that cuts out the whole thing of dependency on being able to get to a Microsoft service when either your internet connection or their sites are offline. And the second thing is that they start to look at things through the eyes of users and try and communicate a lot better, a lot more clearly, a lot more precisely about what's going on. Quite frankly, an update once an hour to say, you know what, we'll be back to you once we've done this, is not enough when your business is offline and you don't know what to do. I just wish they would do those two things, and I think things would get
a lot better. I think you're right. I mean, I feel like blood in the forum says, you know, the fact that's bugging him is network administrators have no control over these remote networks. So if it's your own network that goes down, you can start doing something. Even if it's not the right thing, you're trying basic troubleshooting or rebooting or something. Yeah. Yeah. When you're like, okay, Microsoft, what are you doing? We don't even know what you're doing. Tell us, right?
Yeah, and the interesting thing, I mean, if you look at the timeline of the Teams outage from February, there was a quite a substantial gap between the first signals, let's say, showing up inside Microsoft, say something might be going wrong here, to the time when people actually swung into action. Now, that's understandable because the Microsoft folks have got to be sure that there's an incident, and they've got to be sure that the incident is happening at scale. It's not something that, you know, as a minor fault that's happened on a particular piece of kit that's caused a ripple effect across some other pieces of kit, but then it all goes quiet. Mm. So, you know, this again comes back to communication. Just tell people what's happening and tell people, bring them along. It's almost like storytelling to make people happy rather than giving them just their, oh, we're working on it.
Right. I mean, and then what do you suggest when IT pros say to you, okay, when this does happen, there's an outage of one of the services or multiple services, what do you do? Like, so you're just sitting there waiting for Microsoft to fix something, but is there anything you on your end as the administrator should be doing?
Well, I think they've got to look at the all available sources. So the first check, the basic stuff, the Microsoft admin pages, the service health, see if there is an incident that's declared. And if that incident is affecting their tenant, they should only see stuff showing up in the admin pages if it's affecting their tenant. Mm-hmm. Check around. Definitely check Twitter, because Twitter is, it's all sorts of false signals, but there's a lot of good signals out there as well. And it's a matter of being able to decipher what's good and what's bad. And you get that with a little bit of experience. Maybe check in with a local user group. Local user groups normally have ways of communicating. They may have a WhatsApp group or something like that. Because of the way Office 365 is built, because of the way that it is regionalized, because of the way that it's designed to keep, to limit the effect of an outage to within a data center region, it's likely that if you're having a problem, then the folks in the local user group are also having exactly the same problem. So you can all help each other figure out what's going on. And then if you really want to install some software that helps you know what's going on, there is software out there, office365mom.com, for example, that will allow you to track exactly what's happening for the various services viewed through the lens of your users, which I think is important because, you know, Office 365 is such an enormously immense place at this point in time that the view you're getting from the whole internet is not necessarily what's happening for you right now. And an example for that is, again, you know, from the Teams outage, where, yes, there was an authentication issue. Yes, there was an overload on Azure Key Vault, which caused this problem to occur. But users who had already authenticated were working quite happily all through the outage. Right. Mm-hmm. And people who use different authentication paths, like people who are using the Teams mobile client, kept on working and without a hitch. They never noticed it, which just goes to prove that the experience that somebody has of Office 365 right now may be diametrically opposed to the experience that somebody is having, even in the same building, connected to the same tenant. It just all depends.
True. I mean, do you go so far as to say people should have backups of all their Office 365 data to other clouds just in case something like this happens? Or is that really nothing that will help them when something like the Teams outage or Exchange Online goes down?
Won't help them one bit. Yep. Not a bit. I mean, I hear this, but so I ask myself this question, right? I'm an admin. First of all, I only hear about it in an incident when my users start to be affected. It then takes me a little bit of time to figure out whether or not it's a true incident or just something that's unique to those users. Okay, so we're now maybe an hour into the incident. Now, how long would it take me to get all of the data for my entire tenant switch to Ware. Now there's two big big question marks here. Firstly, how much of the data do you need? And let's face it, we all have more data now than we ever had before. I mean, most Office 365 users now have 100 gigabyte mailboxes and can keep just about as much stuff as they want in their OneDrive accounts or their SharePoint libraries. So there's a heck of a lot of data out there. So that's one thing. How do I move all that data? And then the second thing is, where do I move all that data? Because if Office 365 is down, I can't move it to Office 365. I can't move it to another tenant. Do I move it to G Suite? Can I move it to G Suite? Mm-hmm. That's another question. Can I move it on-prem? No, probably not, because I don't have the capacity. So unfortunately, one of the things I think that's happening as we go further and further along this journey into the cloud is that we become more trapped by the cloud. So really, the only thing you can do is batten down the hatches, figure out what's going on, communicate to your users, keep your users happy, and then wait for Microsoft to fix the problem. Unfortunately, Microsoft is pretty good at fixing problems, and they have an awful lot of resources to help them fix the problem when something goes bad, like the incidents we talked about earlier on.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it feels like, is Microsoft doing this just to increase their own profits in a way, right? Or are they actually doing this the way they've set up Office 365 to be resilient? You know, people who are kind of, what would we call them? I don't know, doubters. They're like, yeah, you know, are they doing this just to show like that, you know, they're really good at fixing things and they can do this? Or is Office 365 really truly resilient? And did they build it to be something that would come back quickly from outages? Because, you know, to be frank, when your email's down for an entire day, it's like, come on, guys, what are you doing over there, right?
Well, I guess it all depends on how you look at this. I think Office 365, firstly, Microsoft invested a whole lot of money in it. I mean, they keep on building out data center regions.
Right.
You know, so we see them around the world now, Japan, Korea, India, Australia, France, Western Europe, UK. You see a new one in Germany. So they just continue to build out Office 365 regions to make sure that they have data sovereignty taken care of and that they can accommodate the needs of multi-geo organizations. Part of the goodness that they get from this is the fact that any Office 365 outage is restricted to the boundary of the region. Inside a region, you're going to have at least two data centers. So, you often have backup for the services, for some of the services coming in from another region. So for Office 365 to have a catastrophic failure, I mean, you'd have to take that lightning strike that happened to the San Antonio data center. You remember that last September?
I do remember that, yep.
you reported extensively on that, I seem to recall. You'd have to take that. If you remember, that was a pretty severe physical event. You know, you had this flash of lightning came in and knocked a whole pile of stuff offline. Mm-hmm. And it took them quite a long time. It took over a day to get everything back up and operational. But, you know, think about a more severe physical event. Well, what would that be? An explosion at a data center?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Would that take out an entire data center? Probably not. Could an entire data center be taken out by all of its internet connectivity being taken out? What would it need for that kind of thing? Well, if you visited any one of these Microsoft data centers, you'd see that there's huge redundancy built into them. So I'm pretty sure that the physical infrastructure of these data centers is good. I'm pretty sure that the software design that they've got, where, for example, Exchange uses database availability groups, every mailbox is protected by the fact that it's copied into four different databases. Mm-hmm. Looking at my mailbox right now, its active copy is in Dublin, but there are passive copies in Amsterdam, Vienna, and Helsinki. So, you know, I think Microsoft has done their best to assure both the software and the physical side of the equations are taken care of. Could they have a horrible, horrible incident which takes out a complete data center? Absolutely. It could be an earthquake, tidal wave, or whatever. Would that stop them restoring service? Probably not, because they have their own dark fiber network, which connects together all these data centers. The data centers are able to take full load for a region. You might get more incidents if you've had, for example, in Canada, one of the Canadian data centers was offline for 2 weeks, but the second one would keep on running. Could you have more incidents in that one data center? Possibly, but you'd still be running. It's kind of hard. Yeah, I think that probably not as much as you can do with given the state of the art right now.
Okay. Well, Tony, we're out of time, but I wanted to, I know, half hour goes by fast, but I wanted to let you tell people where they can find you if they want to follow you.
Oh, so I'm at 12 Knox on Twitter, or office365itpros.com. I should say, what people ask me, why 12 Knox? Because stupidly, I took that name a long time ago when Twitter was starting up. I didn't even think about it. I just took that name. It's the name of my house, and I've used it ever since.
Oh, you know what? I always wondered that, so it's good to know the reason for that. I was like, what is that, a code name or something?
Yeah, it's code. That's a much more intelligent reason. Thank you. I'll use that. It's a code name. I'll let people work out what the code is.
There you go.
Very boring. Sorry.
Well, thank you so much for doing the first MJF chat with me. And thanks to everyone who's listening today to MJF Chat. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks with our next guest. So make sure to check out the Petri.com forums to see who that is and send in your questions early and often. We'll also be posting the audio recording and transcript of this and all our other chats in the Petri.com forums. So thanks again to everyone, and have a nice day.